This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and thanks for joining us on the show. It's 7.06 a.m. 24th of September on a Tuesday. I'm Julian Ng, joined by Wong Xiaoning and Shariz Abdullah. The US markets were flat at yesterday's close on the back of the latest manufacturing data showing steady US economic growth. The Dow was up slightly. S&P and both S&P and 500 and NASDAQ were down slightly.
So meanwhile, Asian stock closed lower on the back of the US-China trade talks uncertainty. So we saw Hang Seng down 0.8, Shanghai Composite down 1%, STI down 0.5, KLCI 0.3% down. Only gain is India Sensex up by 2.8%, and Nikkei was closed yesterday for a public holiday.
Now, for some thoughts on the global markets, we turn to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management in New York. Good morning, Joe, and thanks for joining us. The markets dipped after a Chinese delegation cancelled a planned visit to U.S. Farms last week, but both sides have since come out to assuage concerns that talks have taken a negative turn. What's your read on the trade talks right now, and do you think we'll see some sort of a breakthrough before the end of the year?
Well, I mean, investors just have to get used to sweet and sour trade talks. You know, one day it's on, it's all good. The next day it's sour. So not surprising, but they are talking. There are some soothing words over the weekend. Whether we get a deal by the end of the year remains to be seen. A truce is all really what the markets are looking for. You know, the next big day is October 15th when the United States, you know, would allegedly raise tariffs on some more products of Chinese, on Chinese goods. So we got some time here. So, you know, I think I think the markets are just fatigued with some of these trade talks.
And Joe, the latest European manufacturing data from IHS Market shows that German factory output slowed to its lowest level since 2009. Now, with the rest of Eurozone not faring any better, do you see any bright spots in the European economy, or should investors look elsewhere?
Well, I mean, the bright spot is the fact that it's really, really bad in Europe when it comes to growth. And hopefully that'll be a catalyst for more fiscal spending alongside more monetary policy. So, you know, it takes a while for things to sink in Europe in terms of the fiscal side of the equation. Surely they're going to limp into 2020. But I think there are some reflationary efforts underway. The conversation in Germany is constructive. ECB has done its part. So, you know, when you buy Europe, you're thinking luxury brand goods, logistics companies, like life science companies out of Switzerland. So it's really a sector, country-specific overlay. And then we still have to deal with Brexit, which is, you know, is messier than ever. But, you know, buy the big multinationals, because they're just that. They're multinationals. They're global in nature.
And, you know, looking at India's stock market, they've soared since the announcement of significant corporate tax cuts last week. Will you be putting more money into Indian stocks as a result?
Well, yeah, we're kind of relatively neutral on the emerging markets, and India is interesting at this point, but, you know, well, we're still a lot of when it comes to infrastructure build out, the human capital, a lot of potential in India still here. But, you know, what's Modi's agenda for the second term? It's still not clear to us. So, honestly, I'd be probably buying more like, you know, the e-commerce and the tech giants of China before I bought India, just given kind of how the progression, how quickly one moves versus the other. India, though, you know, step in the right direction, very, very market, in sync with the markets. Hopefully there's some follow through, because I think there's a tremendous amount of upside to India in the long term.
Joe, given that very broad global scenario that you've painted, what do you think are the chances of a recession over the next year?
I mean, global recession, I mean, I think it's diminishing because the central banks have done their part. You know, we've got over 30 central banks that cut rates this year in the last 12 months. Now, more importantly, it's the fiscal side. You're seeing more pump priming, you know, coming out of China, led by China, actually. South Korea just announced some aggressive fiscal reforms, initiatives, India. Now, I think that's going to be kind of the big overlay for the markets in the fourth quarter of this year. Now, it takes time, of course, right? Infrastructure is saying anything. But I do think that globally we can avoid a recession, but, you know, there's still a lot of work to do. We got the election in the United States in 2020. That's going to be a big issue as well. We haven't resolved the China-U.S. trade. We haven't even passed the USMCA deal just yet. So there's headwinds, but I do think we avoid a global recession.
Thanks so much for your thoughts. And that was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management in New York. I particularly liked what he said about Europe, the bright spot in Europe that is really, really bad in Europe, right? So bad news is actually good news, because that would mean that you would have to come up with more policies to stimulate the economy. And that's the same for his assessment on recession. He doesn't think there's going to be a recession because governments around the world are rallying to support their respective domestic economies.
Yeah, they're shifting from monetary policy to now fiscal policies, right? So definitely in Europe, I think around the world, even in Malaysia, we're beginning to see pump priming by the governments, because they know that, you know, cutting rates it cannot be the only solution to this problem.
So China, South Korea and India are on the way of doing that. So yeah, again, hopefully that will become a catalyst for Europe to basically do some fiscal spending.
Meanwhile, in other news, not so good news actually for British tour operator Thomas Cook. Thomas Cook is cooked, right? Collapsed into liquidation yesterday, in spite of last minute fundraising talks to save the company. By the way, Thomas Cook is the world's oldest tour operator at 178 years old, and they have been credited with inventing the package holiday.
So, and it looks like they're negotiating for months to restructure a £1.5 billion debt. So if we look at in August, they secured a deal with its larger shareholder, Fosun Tourism Group, for a £900 million bailout, and in exchange for control of Thomas Cook's tour operation and minority stake in its airline.
However, the banks demanded an additional £200 million that Thomas Cook failed to raise. And the collapse of the company actually puts 21,000 jobs at risk and leaves some 150,000 British tourists stranded abroad.
They would have their insurance policies, right? A lot of these travellers would have bought in the insurance, and the cost then would have to be borne by the insurers to bring these guys home.
I mean, there are estimates as much as £100 million will actually have to be spent on repatriating all these stranded British tourists in places like Spain.
Yeah, and so, I mean, so officials are warning everyone that there would be some disruption, in particular if you look at the flight schedules. And so in total, I think we're looking about 1,000 planes from 18 countries that are going to be affected.
Now, here's possibly a lesson for Malaysia, right? There was a request to the British government to actually bail out Thomas Cook to the extent of £150 million. And Prime Minister Boris Johnson, you know, a very wise Prime Minister coming from the UK, said that no, he wouldn't bail it out. So what do you guys think? I mean, this has got like shades of Malaysia Airlines here, because Malaysia Airlines also not as old as Thomas Cook's, almost 200 years old, but you know, Malaysia Airlines has always been in the debate as to whether we should continue to put it on life support.
I don't know. Are they two separate companies? Because Malaysian Airline, whatever's been done, is still the flag carrier, right, of our country. Thomas Cook is not. It's never been.
I mean, isn't
if
it?
Anything, no, if you ask me,
it's 178 years.
Yeah,
it's
but the flag carrier of UK is probably the British Airways, not so much
Thomas Cook. Which has been sold. It's not really being owned by the British government anymore. And there was a comment that the British government has as good as vandalized a significant British company.
Well, I don't know about, you know, but just looking at the performance of what's been going on so far. Now, you look at Bloomberg, they're saying that nearly £2 billion in debt, that's what Thomas Cook is currently undergoing. And back in May itself, the group itself reported a record loss of about £1.5 billion. And this is triggering about impairment charges on its 2007 merger with MyTravel and a, you know, steep drop in summer sales.
And Thomas Cook is not just an airline. In fact, the airline is a by-the-by business. It's mainly a package tour company. And then it has a chartered airline attached to the entire entity. Now, the question is, do you think package holiday companies can survive in this new environment?
It's hard.
Where you can just buy whatever you want online, right? You can create your own package tour very, very easily, and maybe even cheaper than some of these players out there.
Yeah, but some use Excel sheet, you know, just to plan their holidays.
Yeah, I do that.
Very detailed ones.
So Thomas Cook is clearly facing what I would say a structural decline in the space that they're operating in.
That's right. A lot of online price disruption happening. All right, so we'll be coming back with some local news after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.